Tom Woods Show, episode 1286.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here, the Tom Woods Show.
Hey folks, it's my job to equip you with the strongest arguments for the libertarian position on issue after issue where you tend to get cornered by your friends. Well, deregulation caused the financial crisis is still a big one 10 years later as people reflect on those terrible times. Very, very important to smash this one with a baseball bat. And I've got just the baseball bat for you. It's my free ebook, The Deregulation Boogeyman. Grab it over at regulationmyths.com. Hi, everybody. Tom Woods here. Connor Boyack is with me today. Connor has done so many things in the liberty world. He runs an excellent state think tank in Utah called the Libertas Institute. He happens to be my tech guy. He doesn't really have the time to do that anymore. He's just a generous guy who keeps me on as a client, even though I'm sure he'd like to let me go at this point. But we've been working together for so long, I don't know what I'd do without him. But he helped set up, well, a number of my websites. He's been indispensable for me. But he's also the creator of the Tuttle Twins children's book series, now in its 9th volume. And each of these books takes some classic text from the libertarian world and develops a children's story around it. And it's very, very well done, beautifully illustrated. I'm sure many of you have heard of the series or seen these books before. They're absolutely excellent. So I cannot recommend them to you highly enough. And in particular, I want to talk, we actually have a bunch of things to talk about today, but I want to start by talking about the most recent entry in the series, which is The Tuttle Twins and the Fate of the Future, which is based on a text by Murray Rothbard. So we're bringing Rothbard even to children, just to introduce basic ideas about how the world works and how it ought to work. So very, very interesting and valuable. Now, make sure you stay tuned, by the way, after my conversation with Connor, because I have several important things to tell you about. But anyway, I'm very glad to welcome Connor back to the show. Connor, glad you could be here.
Thanks, Tom. It's always great to be with you.
I think this is the hardiest core of the hardcore books ever done, particularly given that it's aimed at children. You're going to get children thinking like Rothbardians. There should be a law against that.
We're going to have six-year-old ANCAPs at this point. It's kind of scary.
That is absolutely nuts. So this is the 9th book in the Tuttle Twins series?
That's right, yep.
All right, so I know a lot of folks who have listened to the show have heard you a number of times talking about previous volumes, but tell us a little bit about what the Tuttle Twins series is. And by the way, does it have an ending or will it go on perpetually?
Well, it's funny. I was with you at the Mises Institute a few weeks back for one of their events, and I had the opportunity to present the Tuttle Twins, and I asked for a raise of hands, you know, who here has not yet heard of the Tuttle Twins. I was amazed. It shows maybe how poor my marketing effort is. I thought every libertarian in the world has heard of these books at this point. I guess maybe they're not all listening to your podcast enough, Tom. So maybe that's the real problem here. But
That is a major, major problem. You and I both need to go on a tear here.
Exactly. So we have work to do. Nonetheless, for the two or three people out there in our community who've not yet heard of these books, the whole idea is we're taking classic libertarian free market type content books and essays, turning them into children's versions with fun stories. And so we're reaching an entirely new, not only generation, but audience as well, where most of these people who are reading Tuttle Twins books would never have picked up, you know, a Hayek book or a Mises book or a Rothbard book, never even heard of these people. But now they're hearing in their, you know, mom groups or at their church group or homeschool co-op or whatever that, hey, these books teach your kids important values, good principles, and on those types of very superficial but important recommendations, these books are spreading from family to family. And so we're reaching a whole new audience who is not really within our kind of libertarian ecosystem already. And because they're in a children's format, the barrier to entry is very low. It's non-threatening to a parent, whereas an economic tome, you know, might be very off-putting. But here, a fun kids book, they'll sit down with their kids, they'll learn together the principles of a free society, and suddenly we're reaching a whole ton of new people. So it's very kind of fun to broaden the tent a little bit through the Tuttle Twins.
Yeah, no kidding. I'm pretty sure the first volume in the series was The Tuttle Twins and the Miraculous Pencil.
It was actually the Bastiat book.
No, the Bastiat one. No, yeah. Was the Pencil the second one?
Pencil was second, yep.
That's right. The Law was the first one, which makes sense because there you're really laying down the basic principles. When we say nobody can steal, man, do we mean it. You know, when we say nobody can do X, Y, and Z, we really, really mean it. So that really does lay a good foundation. And then the Pencil one, based on the I Pencil essay of Leonard Reed, was also so well chosen because the idea there, I think, is to appeal to the natural sense of wonder that children have. And what we kind of want to do is keep that sense of wonder as they become adults, that you don't look around and take for granted what really is a miraculous thing in the International Division of Labor. But now we get deep, deep into the tradition, and now we're getting into Murray Rothbard and the work that you've chosen to cover in the most recent Tuttle Twins book is Anatomy of the State, mm-hmm. which is an essay, lengthy essay by Rothbard that is really one of these, I don't know, I hate life-changing because it's such a cliche, but
it is
a mind-opening work. It makes you think in totally different ways. In fact, years ago, back when we lived in Kansas, my kid's school was a really great school. And one way you know it was a great school was at the 11th grade, had a great ideas course, and they would invite me in every year to teach the unit on classical liberalism.
Oh,
so I thought, all right, I'll teach a little classical liberalism, but then I want to get hardcore libertarian on them. So I did the John Locke and the whole thing, but the one reading I had them do was Anatomy of the State. And yeah, I came in and it looked like they had had limbs blown off and their brains blown open. It was a really neat sight to see. So anyway, talk to us. First of all, what's the title of this volume?
Yeah. So this is, as you said, the ninth book, The Tuttle Twins and the Fate of the Future, based on Anatomy of the State by Rothbard. And the whole idea, in fact, it was funny. My wife is kind of our chief editor. She does an amazing job editing these books. And on her first read through, she was like, well, wait a minute. You've kind of covered all these things before. It seems like you're being a little redundant in this book. And intentionally so. What's interesting about this book is you'll see as you read through it, we kind of reference back to the Law and to the iPencil book and to the Road to Serfdom and all the most of the other books, the Golden Rule, talking about non-aggression principle. In this book, we're kind of incorporating some of those ideas because from our perspective, Anatomy of the State, really, when you get down to this fundamental question of the state, it incorporates all of these lessons that children have been learning about along the way in our series. So when you're talking about the free market, when you're talking about justice, when you're talking about central planning, all of those things connect back to this underlying problem of the state. And so we're helping children see that, hey, look, all of these like individual lessons and ideas you're learning about, they're all connected here. And here's why they're connected, because at the end of the day, it's all about this question of, do we use persuasion and society or do we use coercion in the state? And so in our story, of course, all these books, for those who aren't familiar with it, it's not we're sitting down and kind of explaining this to children. It's all wrapped in a fun story. So the kids are still having a good time and they're being exposed to these ideas rather than just sat down and, you know, in textbook format, this is what it means and you must learn these definitions. And so in our story, it's kind of a fun way that we did it. There's a book club. And so each month there's a different theme. And so the twins get to choose the theme and they had watched this dystopian film, right? And they're kind of scared. Oh my gosh, look how crazy the future could be. How do we stop that from happening? And they come to realize, well, actually, like, you know, sometimes fiction is very close to reality and dystopian futures are sometimes our present. And so they begin to talk about like, how do we avoid a future like that? What are the problems with the dystopian future when you have these, you know, Orwellian, authoritarian type governments oppressing people? And so they end up choosing Anatomy of the State as their book. And so in our book, the twins are reading Anatomy of the State. And so the reader of our book gets to kind of go along with the twins as they read these different passages, as their parents or other people explain and kind of break down those ideas to them. So in a way, our readers are kind of reading this like on a different like meta level, Anatomy of the State. We're kind of holding their hand through these different ideas so that they can envision a future in which maybe there's more persuasion and less coercion, a future in which society is resolving problems rather than relying on the state. And we invite the reader towards the end of the book, they go back for their book club, they have this fun little activity and this little intellectual exercise to say, okay, let's all imagine together in our book club group, what a future without the state would be like. Like, how do you even envision that? How would you solve problems X, Y, and Z? And we walk through a couple of examples just to expose the reader a little bit to say, like, what would that even look like? How do we imagine a future when it's so different from what we have today? But at the end of the day, like, we are addressing this core underlying fundamental thing. Some of our readers, Tom, to your last question about how many books, some may see in this book kind of an encapsulation of the other books and think, oh, this was kind of their last one to tie it all off. And we'd always planned on like 8 to 10 books. We actually did a survey. This is a couple months ago now of all of our readers. We have about 50,000 families in our network here. And one of the questions was like, hey, should we stop at 8 to 10 books or keep going? And I think it was like 80% some odd were like, no, keep going. And so at present, we're just going to keep this train on going, keep doing future books. I hold out this hope that we can figure out how to turn Mises' human action into a child's version. That will be kind of a feat unto itself. But we're just going to keep going. We're having too much fun to stop.
That's great. It's such a great idea. And I'm telling you, for so long, I had parents asking me where they could find books like this. And I'd have to say, sorry, there aren't books like this. Maybe somebody will make them someday. And my mind, I thought, yeah, right, that's not going to happen. I'm giving these people false hope. And then you went ahead and did it. So now let's get into the nitty-gritty here, because there's, as you know, Rothbard is, and that particular essay is pretty tough medicine.
Yes.
About what the state is, what the state is not. And basically, the state is not any of the things your teachers tried to tell you it was. And it is the opposite of those things. And it's an apparatus of coercion. You know, it has interests of its own that do not align with yours. It's not a voluntary club. It's not whatever. It's not a social contract, whatever. It's none of that
right.
stuff. So that could be a little tough for a kid to take. And so there's a part of the book where one of the children says, well, you know, I know Mr. Rothbard, you know, doesn't really like government, but surely we need some government after all. Do you want to explain how that little question is addressed?
You know, the challenge here is to help a six-year-old understand this stuff, right? Our age range is about 5 to 11. And what I do, I mean, is if you think about like The Simpsons, for example, or Shrek, or some of these great creative projects where you connect with the child and the adult at the same time. There's something for everybody, right? The kids are laughing along. The adults are being entertained as well. In a way, that's kind of what we're trying to do here with the Teletwins is kind of educate and entertain the child. But we're also talking to the parents. This is kind of the devious thing about our project is that, you know, the older siblings and the parents are reading along. We get so much email and Facebook messages and stuff from parents who say, holy cow, I've never learned any of that before. Like, that was amazing for me, let alone my child learning. And so they're a big part of our audience. And so to your question, Tom, how do we explain, you know, this difference between surely there has to be a government, right? And how do we do that without the state? We're trying to figure out a way to boil that down for kids, but we're also trying to find a way, a very simple way for parents to understand it who never would have read Anatomy of the State or would have found kind of this idea too confrontational if presented by an adult. But now that it's in this kid's book, it's a little bit more disarming. And so when we get into that question, before we've gotten to that question in the book, we've talked about one of the key passages, I think, in Anatomy of the State where Rothbard says that the state is the systematization of the predatory process over a given territory. And that's kind of the key definition. Now, that's a mouthful for, you know, an 8-year-old or whatever. So we have to kind of break that down further. So first, there's an example in the book where the dad pulls up a little YouTube video of, I think it's like a leopard chasing a gazelle. And so they watch this, you know, leopard chasing the gazelle, finally attacks it and, you know, and succeeds. And so Mr. Tuttle says, well, what's going on here, right? Like this is the gazelle was the prey. And so what's the leopard? Oh, it's a predator, right? So now we've understand in Rothbard's sentence that the predatory process, what that means, you have someone who's the prey. And in that process, it's us who are the prey. But the visual, the example of the leopard and the gazelle helps the twins or adults as well really understand when we say the predatory process, we very much mean that there's prey involved. And then Mr. Tuttle goes on to feature this story where this news story he looked at about gang territory. They're fighting over, you know, different territory in the city. And that's the part of the sentence where it's the predatory process over a given territory, that the state is very much this geographical thing. There's arbitrary lines drawn on a map. And just like gangs in a city, you have entire governments saying, this is our territory. We have a monopoly of this predatory process. And that systematization is very much that it becomes normalized and so forth. So for the reader, we have to first kind of unpack what that means before then, Tom, the question that you point out gets raised of, well, wait a minute, I'm a little confused here, because if the state isn't good, there has to be a government. And so that's when their parents take advantage of the opportunity to say, well, wait a minute, in society, there's government everywhere. You know, in my business, Mr. Tuttle, I think, is talking about, like, look, in my business, we have a government. We have rules in place. We have a governance structure. Everything is agreed to, but it's all done by consent. It's all done explicitly. In our church, we have governance. In our family, we have governance. So just because we wouldn't have the state does not mean that there wouldn't be people in charge and rules in place. It just means that consent is ultimately what is most important. And then later in the story, you know, we unpack this idea of the monopoly and competition, which is also an essential element. But yeah, Elijah, who's the illustrator, and I, as we were working on this, we had so many conversations like, are we really going to do this? Like, do we really want to go this far? And are we really going to talk about this stuff with kids? Because it is so fundamental and so strong, but from our perspective, so important to really help people even like talk about this and think about this. This seems to be like the state question is so often ignored, and we really want to take it head on in a very kind of more simple way, in a very kind of non-threatening way. We're not being so aggressive here in the book, but we are approaching a topic that is in and of itself oftentimes controversial.
Okay, a couple things about that. First of all, anytime you explain something for children, you automatically take some of the edge off it. So then that makes it, I think, a little bit more palatable to the parents too. In other words, I can explain what Rothbard's saying in a way that makes it sound kind of reasonable. And of course, I think it's eminently reasonable, but it's shocking to most people. But if you just talk about, we want all human relations to be consensual, and this relationship certainly is anything but, and you just explain it like that, yeah, you know what, I never really thought of it that way. And so the second point of yours that I would want to amplify is that this is a question that is not raised, because everybody is trained to believe that either there was some social contract that created the state, or they get up and salute a flag, or whatever it is. It's just assumed. The question is begged. There's no real exploration of the issue. And yet, what could be more important of a political issue than what is the state? Is it morally justified? What are the circumstances under which violence can be justified? These questions have to be answered, not just glided over like we all just know the answer. Mm-hmm. There's no rigor in that. So you've got a Rothbard volume now, which impresses the heck out of me, dedicated
I want to add really briefly there, Rothbard himself kind of hones in on the point you were just raising at the end of the essay. He says the problem of the state is evidently as far from solution as ever, right? Like we're so far away from even addressing the issue, let alone coming up with reasonable and feasible ways to resolve the problem that, man, this is like so far out there that few people will even entertain. And so then he ends by saying, perhaps new paths of inquiry must be explored if the successful final solution of the state question is ever to be attained. And so that's how we end our book, is just as he ended his essay, to say, how do we have those new paths of inquiry? We literally invite the reader, so as part of the story, and then the readers themselves to say, let's walk through some examples. Let's at least entertain the thought, as controversial as that is, as much as most people don't even want to do that. How are we ever going to address the question if we won't even entertain the idea? And so, as you point out, that is so far afield from what people want to do, but that's what we're literally trying to do here, is at least open people's minds to consider those alternatives, spend a little bit of mental energy on it, and try and envision a future where maybe that question is somewhat addressed, if not fully resolved. That's kind of the fun, you know, the fate of the future, persuasion versus coercion. How do we avoid the dystopian future? We need to take this question head on, and that's what we're trying to do here in the book.
We did not cover the volume before this one, in which you explored a book by Israel Kirzner, who is another great Austrian economist. And is it Competition and Entrepreneurship? Okay, so tell me the title of that Tuttle Twins volume and how you got the point of that book across. And what was the point of that book?
Yeah, so Dr. Kirzner's book, by his own admission to me in a letter when we were corresponding about us doing a book based on his, he was a little bit perplexed. He's like, well, that book is kind of dense, you know, very much for like an academic audience, but it's a fantastic book. It talks about the central role of the entrepreneur in the economy, in trying to drive innovation and trying to create prosperity, that you very much have this innovator, this change agent who is moving forward to increase productivity and output and prosperity and so forth. Very important work. And so our book is called The Tuttle Twins and Their Spectacular Show Business. And what we've done here is create a story in which the twins themselves become entrepreneurs. They decide to learn how to set up a business, and very much walking through methodologically kind of the nuts and bolts of entrepreneurship. How would you create a plan? What problem are you trying to solve? What resources do you have at your disposal? Who's in your network who could help you? And very much kind of this analysis approach to entrepreneurship to say, look, if you're a kid, you know, this is like the lemonade stand on steroids. How would you actually go about trying to become an entrepreneur? What are the very kind of principle basics that a parent can walk through with their children to say, let's kind of explore this opportunity, sit down and kind of analyze what are the problems out there that we can solve? What are the demands that are going unfulfilled? What can we do about them? How do we go about reaching our customers? How do we advertise? And so in the story, the twins decide, the family, the Tuttle family decides to set up this little community theater. They had gone to New York. They had seen this play on Broadway. They were watching, you know, Shark Tank, and very intoxicated with this idea of entrepreneurship, and they love theater. And so they realize, hey, there's an opportunity. Our community doesn't have a theater. And so then they get into setting it up, but then someone else across town is kind of doing the same thing. So now they have competition, which is, of course, a key aspect in Dr. Kirshner's book, talking about the role that competition plays in the economy. And so we kind of pit them against somebody else in the book. And of course, the twins have put in all this hard labor and hard work, and they're kind of bummed out that someone else is doing the same thing. But they're taught, well, no, actually, this is a great thing. It's a net positive for everybody. You should embrace this. It's going to motivate you and drive you to be better. We actually, as a fun little side note, here in Utah, we set up this event every summer called the Children's Entrepreneur Market. The Acton folks actually do this around the country on a more limited basis. In most states, they have, I think it's called the Acton Business Fair, the Children's Business Fair. And basically, kind of a farmer's market run entirely by kids. We do about a dozen of these throughout the summer. We have about 200 or 300 kids at each one. And so kids are selling, you know, crafts and toys and clothes and art and games and food, all sorts of stuff. It is amazing. They make a ton of money. We bring out thousands of kids. The whole point in my bringing this up is that this year, with the publication of this book, we've started giving this book to all of the children who participate in our fair, the Tuttle Twins and Their Spectacular Show Business. And it basically becomes in the home educational curriculum so that they can improve what they're doing. Parents are sitting down with their children saying, okay, let's analyze this a bit. We need a plan, or we need to do our marketing a little bit better. We need to understand our audience a little bit better. And it becomes a fun way for these children at a very basic level to begin to learn the nuts and bolts of entrepreneurship and begin to apply it. So that's really fun to see. It's not just a book. It's not just an idea. This is actually, and can and should be applied by these kids to actually start to put into practice. And that part has been especially fun.
I want to know about the promotional work you've been doing, and also the efforts to get these books used and talked about in schools. What can you tell us about that?
Well, you know, so we've sold, I think, about 300,000 of these books now. They're doing pretty well on the retail side. They're getting out there. But I have this just nagging feeling, right, that there's so much more opportunity out there to be getting into schools, to be reaching into families that otherwise wouldn't have purchased these books or heard about these books. And so we've begun developing curriculum around each book, basically lesson plans that can match along with the books that teachers can use in the classroom. So we started with the pencil book, the Tuttle Twins and the Miraculous Pencil. And the idea here is that that's such a as you point out, kind of a fundamental opportunity for children to recognize that this sense of awe and wonder around the world is something that can be maintained throughout adulthood. We need to maintain that awe of, you know, spontaneous order and market harmony and so forth. And so that book really takes advantage of that to say, now let's build a curriculum around it. Let's get into the classroom and talk about free market economics. Let's talk about what is spontaneous order. Why can and do people around the world with different cultures and languages and religions all work together harmoniously in pursuit of common ends that they don't even recognize. They don't know that they're working on the same projects. And so we found from teachers that this is a really fun thing to do. We've done assemblies going into like fourth and fifth grade where we bring like a really big pencil and we talk about it and basically make this come alive for kids so that they can understand these ideas. So we've started doing that with some of our less political books. Obviously, I don't imagine that this Rothbard book is going to have mass penetration into fourth grade classrooms anytime soon. But some of the books that are less overtly political and more economic have found much greater reception in classrooms. And so we have kind of this sister organization, the Association for Teaching Kids Economics, through which we're trying to get some of that off the ground and find where those opportunities are. Admittedly, the schools are a tough nut to crack, right? I mean, especially when you go through the bureaucracies and the administrations, it's more that we've had to kind of find the like-minded teachers who are willing to incorporate this material, notwithstanding this top-down set of standards that are handcuffing them. And so we'll have to kind of see how that teases out and what the opportunities there are going forward. But we very much see this opportunity to get into the K through 8 classroom space because, man, we're just, if we as organizations, as people are waiting to talk to people until they're adults, you know, when they've already been subjected to, you know, decades now of misinformation and propaganda and bias, it's very tough, as you know, Tom, to educate folks like that. You have to peel away those layers that they resist being peeled away. And so the whole idea here with the Tuttle Twins, and then of course with getting into the classrooms as well, is that imagine a movement a decade or two from now when we have millions of children who grew up on the Tuttle Twins who have learned these foundational ideas from a young age. What would that society look like? What would that electorate look like? And we think there's far greater opportunity to be planting these seeds in the minds of children and seeing what that sprouts into rather than only waiting until people are adults before we try and persuade them to our beliefs.
You mentioned the Association for Teaching Kids Economics. There's a certain podcast host you may know who apparently sits on the board of that organization.
He's a very esteemed individual. I believe I'm talking to him right now.
That's right. That's right. So that's a great thing. So you have a website for that too, but we want to stay focused on the Tuttle Twins book. So there, the Tuttle Twins website is tuttletwins.com. Are there any other websites you want to give out? Or do you want to stick with TuttleTwins.com?
TuttleTwins.com is the best place to be. And obviously, with this new book coming out and the whole set, we're always trying to drive sales and opportunities. So for your listeners, let's do a coupon code, Tom, if that works for you. Let's do coupon Woods, and we'll do 50% off the books. And so whether you, most of your listeners are longtime listeners, of course, and probably just need to pick up some of the more recent books, or if we're reaching anyone new, you can get the whole set, all the activity workbooks for free. And so make sure you enter coupon code Woods at checkout. That'll be a credit here to Tom for helping us spread the word. And Tom, you got a special link, I think, to send people as well.
Yeah, but I feel guilty using it if you're going to give people 50% off. I'll just use the naked regular link, TuttleTwins.com, coupon code Woods. And it's good to the point, Connor, where when people go to random product pages, they just try out Woods as a coupon code just in case I have a relationship with them.
That's like the AAA membership, right? You got to use it everywhere.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that actually worked for a guy who he has a substitute for ice. So it's like these granite stones. And this way it keeps your drink cold without watering it down.
I hadn't
announced that there was some connection there. So somebody just typed in Woods and got himself like 15% off or something. So you never know. So TuttleTwins.com, coupon code Woods is what all you good folks should be doing. I'll link to this stuff and with the reminder about the coupon code at TomWoods.com/1286. So Connor, congratulations. Maybe I will someday, I'll still be alive. I'll be in my 90s and I'll be old enough that maybe one of my books could at that point be old enough. And you guys will be desperate for ideas at that point after doing, you know, 230 of these. You'll say, all right, maybe we'll do a Woods book after all before the guy expires.
But well, we haven't got to the point of doing a full book. You are on the list, Tom. However, your books, I believe you know this, but if you don't, there was an Easter egg in the Tuttle Twins Learn About the Law where...
Oh, I saw it, baby. Yeah, I saw it.
Fred's bookshelf. And in fact, that same bookshelf makes an appearance here in The Fate of the Future, this latest book, because they go back to Fred's house And I believe we added one of your more recent books. I'm not remembering off the top of my head, but Meltdown is in there. Rollback is in there. Nullification is in there. Several of your other books, and so you've worked your way into the books a little bit. We'll see what
I appreciate that. No, it's fine. You know, I appreciate that. It's funny because I'm the sort of person who, if I go to somebody's house and there's a bookshelf, I'm immediately over there. I want to see what books the person has. So even in these fictional works, it's not even a real bookshelf. I'm still going, gee, I wonder what books are on this shelf. I couldn't help looking at it. All right. Anyway, continued good luck to you, Connor. Thanks a lot.
Thanks as always, Tom. Appreciate your help spreading the word.
All right, folks, a few little things to tell you about. As I record this, or let's see, the date that this is being released, put it that way, is November 16th, 2018. The following week, several things are going on, and they revolve around Black Friday. Number one, on Black Friday, I have my biggest blowout on libertyclassroom.com of the year, and we're taking that master lifetime membership, which includes lifetime access, all the courses we have, plus all the videos I made for the Ron Paul homeschool program, which adults can listen to. You will not feel like that's a juvenile course in any way. That's a ton of knowledge that it's taken me a lifetime to acquire, and I distilled it down into those video and audio files. You can consume them on the go anytime you want from any device. We have a mobile app. It's great stuff. So major, major discount on Black Friday. That is the 23rd of November. Write that on your calendar. Second thing, if you've been thinking under my urging of starting your own blog or website, wait. Don't go get your hosting until Black Friday, November 23rd, because that's when Bluehost has its best deal of the year. So if you're going to do it, you might as well just hold off for a few extra days and get yourself a discount. And of course, use tomwoods.com/blue when you get that discount, and you'll get all my bonuses. So get the details as to how to claim those bonuses and what they are at tomwoods.com/publicity, because the publicity page is where I explain how I'll give you free publicity for that new site. So that's where you get the information, tomwoods.com/publicity. Then finally, if you are interested in learning a foreign language, then Black Friday is also a very important day. Actually, Wednesday the 21st through Friday the 23rd is when you can get 60% off all the foreign language courses at Rocket Languages. And I'm an affiliate of Rocket Languages. My daughter, Regina, has the Japanese course from Rocket Languages, and she likes it very much. And the way they do it is, on Wednesday the 21st, starting at 12:01 a.m., they're going to be knocking 60% off the first 1,000 courses sold. So it's possible that by Black Friday, they will already have sold 1,000 courses, and the discount will be gone. So you really should jump on this by Wednesday, and the coupon code you need is all one word, Black Friday, and that will get you 60% off the first 1,000 courses sold. So you want to make sure you're one of those first 1,000. I have actually seen them sell 900 in a day, and so it's down to just 100 by the second day of the promotion. So jump on that Wednesday the 21st. It does theoretically run until Black Friday the 23rd. So those are the three things. Liberty Classroom, if you've been meaning to pick that up, you're not going to get a better deal than what you're going to see on Black Friday. And you get all the 400-plus videos from my courses with the Ron Paul curriculum added into all the Liberty Classroom courses, plus the forums, the live events, every course we ever create until we all drop dead. All of that stuff is yours. You definitely want to put this on your Google calendar. And on that day, go to libertyclassroom.com. And if you really, really want a good deal, go to libertyclassroom.com, then get your web hosting at tomwoods.com/blue, and then get yourself a foreign language course at tomwoods.com/rocket for Rocket Languages. That's what you want to do, tomwoods.com/rocket. All right, that's it. Now, coming up next week, we've got some interesting topics here. Our friend Mance Rader is coming back on the show, and he's, of course, been using that pseudonym for some time, and he's going to be dropping the pseudonym. He's going to be going under his real name, and for the first time ever, on that episode, he'll be appearing under his real name. So we'll be doing that. We'll be talking about his most recent book, which is like a walkthrough of the crazy left-wing commie culture that we're dealing with here that turns a blind eye half the time to communist atrocities. And he does it through memes, which are very funny. So we'll have a good conversation with him. Then I'm talking to a fellow who runs something called Decriminalize Denver, which is seeking to increase people's access to psilocybin mushrooms, which research is increasingly showing has very good effects when used by people suffering from depression and other problems. So it's a very, very interesting subject, something I knew nothing about, but it's a great conversation. I've got another conversation with Scott Horton next week. We're going to be talking about, we talked about World War I with Hunt Tooley, but we're going to develop that a little bit more and go through the 20th century, just looking at the consequences and some more information about World War I and the way the progressives used World War I as a way of introducing to the American public the idea of the central planning of society. And they thought that war would be a great opportunity to, in effect, kind of get people more accustomed to the idea that their property really is at the disposal of the regime and that they should not think in 19th century individualist terms anymore, but they should think in terms of we're all commonly working together toward a big goal in society. And a war is a great pedagogical device for getting people to think that way, they thought. So it's really, really creepy. So we'll talk about that and some other interesting stuff. Bob Murphy, you'll hear me talking to Bob Murphy next week. And then for my Thanksgiving Day episode, I'm going to be talking to Jeff Deist, and we're going to take a letter that was written to me some time ago. I'm sorry it's taken me a while to get to it. An 8-year-old boy wrote to me, and he is interested in history, and he's particularly interested in George Washington. And then he said that he's hoping to become president someday. And, you know, what did I think of that, or what could I tell him about that? And I'm going to have Jeff Deist come on, and Jeff and I are going to talk at, I'm not going to say we're going to talk at necessarily in, you know, third grade level, but let's say we're going to review some elementary concepts related to politics and kind of evaluate whether that's something that we ought to strive for or not, or maybe it might be better to aspire to other things. So we're going to do that on Thanksgiving. So if you're driving around, you're getting to your relative's house on Thanksgiving and you're steeling yourself against what you know is coming, which is the annual political discussion at the table, you can escape. You can get your escape from this world by listening to that nice episode that I'll have with Jeff Deist. So please do subscribe at tomwoods.com/iTunes. Please tell your friends to subscribe at tomwoods.com/iTunes. Whatever you can do to help me spread the word here. If you're a longtime listener, that must be because you think I'm doing something worthwhile here. And therefore, I'd like as many people to hear what I'm doing as possible. And don't cost them nothing. So it's an easy sell. But if you could spread that tomwoods.com/iTunes link around, you would make me super duper happy and, you know, thankful. Here we are with Thanksgiving coming up. I am thankful for all you folks who listen regularly and who support me. I really appreciate all you folks. All right, that's it for this week. See you next week.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.